Townsville 1 was all about that seven-time champion, Jamie Wincup, with two wins from two poles and closing in on the championship battle with Scotty McLaughlin. But the other pole and the other win went to that exact rival, Scotty McLaughlin. We had chaos on Saturday in Turn 2 when Shane Van Gisbergen turned around Anton Di Pasquale. Cam Waters enjoyed a better weekend, claiming second overall in his Monster Energy Mustang. This weekend was again about soft tyres and how much they wore out. But what's going to happen next week as we have Townsville 2? This is Supercars in Review.
Welcome, everybody, to our review of the first leg of the Townsville doubleheader. I'm joined by Andrew Clark. How are you going, Clarky?
Yeah, pretty good, Nev. It's an interesting weekend, these ones. Not sure yet about having only one tyre compound for a race weekend, though.
Yeah, well, they're obviously going to go into the next leg, or the leg two, but some of the teams have worked it out from this weekend. Well, I think some teams started figuring it out because the first race had everything happening, but the two races on the Sunday, they kind of, everybody had figured their shit out, so to speak.
Yeah, and it'll get even more that way next weekend. So, everybody will go away because now they can get the data off the cars, which they can't do over the course of the race weekend. So they can pull the data and find out what they need to fix. So I think you'll find next weekend the cars are really tuned up and those gaps, which are pretty narrow in qualifying, will become even narrower again, which makes it interesting.
Well, unless the guys who are at the front improve more. I mean, cream always rises to the top.
Yeah, but I don't think you're going to see them getting much better. I mean, you got 11.99 is the fastest ever qualifying lap there, and we were doing 12 twos. So I don't think there's a lot of gain left at the top end of the field. So I think it's more about, it's going to be more about not necessarily straight out qualifying speed, but about consistency over the course of the race with the tyres. But what you might find next weekend is they get a little bit more tyre life out of it. And of course, we don't know what the weather's going to be like next weekend yet either. So all sorts of things.
That could be our saving grace, a bit of rain. Yeah, it nearly rained on the Sunday. But let's get into some news before we get into races. First of all, the calendar's changed. It looks like they're not going to go to Queensland Raceway. It looks like they're headed off to the Bend.
Yeah, well, remember the first booking was actually to go to Sandown, but with Victoria in lockdown and only coming out of lockdown a week before, potentially coming out of lockdown a week before because no one really knows what the government's going to do. So Sandown's clearly not going to happen. I mean, that's the only thing we really know about the whole story. The rumour was pretty hot on Queensland Raceway getting back-to-back rounds, but John Tetley, who owns the place, has come out and said, no, I've lost that to the Bend. So the Bend have come in. They've clearly mended their wounds. Everything made it all nice and tidy and gone up to supercars and sorted it all out. So we're looking at back-to-back races there as our lead into Bathurst.
It looks like the Bend may have crossed supercars' palms with silver.
Yeah, and that'll always help, won't it? Yeah, silver always helps.
And gold.
Yeah, gold would be good too, and it is supercars, so they probably do want gold. It's interesting, I think, because what they can actually do there is that we can run on different track layouts fairly easily and significant track layouts. So hopefully when they do this, they're actually going to give us a different track layout between the two weekends. Because in all honesty, the Bend, no matter how magnificent the facility is, it just hasn't produced good supercar racing yet. So let's fiddle around with the track format and see what we can get to.
Well, moving on, Repco. Looks like they could, they're in a box seat maybe to become the title sponsor when Virgin fly away.
Well, Virgin will probably have to fly away. I mean, their solvency issues are causing massive trouble. So I would think that's something they would be, that the administrators would be looking to shed as soon as possible. I would think they'll be out of it for next year. Repco's coming in. They're serious about the sport, and it's about bedding down the ownership structures of Repco, which is now part of an entity that has massive motor racing activities around the world. So they own the Napa brand and a couple of others as well. So, they are into motorsport and Repco, as we discussed in the preview to this round, does have motor racing pedigree with the Repco Brabham in particular. So it's a logical step. And as you keep saying, cars have to stay on the road a little bit longer because we've all lost so much money through this COVID crisis that keeping your car running is a good thing. Logical step. It is only a rumour, clearly, and we'll see where it ends up. But we know the person who wrote the story is normally pretty reliable, so we should be able to get somewhere there.
Well, I can tell people where to go to read the story. It's all on auto action. Part of it, yeah. And in the story is Repco could also be sponsoring a team, and the likely suspect, so to speak, would be Walkinshaw Andretti United because of their close relationship with Napa, who is the parent company of Repco.
Yeah, I think it'd be very unlikely to sponsor the series and a team. So if they did that, they might run it under the other brand. So they might run the Napa brand on it on the car. It doesn't make sense to do car and series. So and remember, they did run the Napa branding on the wildcard for the IndyCar drivers at Bathurst. Yeah, they're trying to build that brand in Australia as well. So, yeah, wait and see. I think clearly they've got inspired by the sport, which is a good thing.
Well, the last rumour, it looks like that ARG, Australian Racing Group, is in the box seat to purchase supercars.
Yeah, they're cashed up and ready to go, from what I understand. But we've heard this rumour now for quite a while. I think you were the first one to mention it to me back in about January this year. And it's been floating around ever since. So, you know, let's see how serious they do get. If you were cashed up, now's the time to buy a business. All businesses are going to be cheaper than they were 6 months ago because there's been a lot of pain. So it might be a good time for them to step in and do it. Would it be good for the sport? Interesting. You know, they run the TCR series and they've got a few other cars in the stable there, the GTs and those sort of things. It'd be an interesting thing to mix it all in together, but how they could make it all work would be the fascinating part. It is a business and all businesses are for sale.
Well, watch this space, because supposedly they're in the box seat to purchase the sport. The sport's like trying to finalise its television deal, which I think is the last piece of the puzzle before they feel like they could sell the sport. But ARG are there.
Yeah, well, we were expecting a TV announcement sometime during this Townsville phase. So Channel 7 and Supercars have apparently made a deal there. That should be announced fairly soon. As you say, it is the last puzzle because that's the one that defines how much revenue is coming in. So if you've got a really good TV deal, you might not want to sell. If you didn't get such a good TV deal, you might want to sell. We'll see which way it rolls.
Oh, well. Okay, getting into race 19 of the championship. First, well, even before qualifying, stuff was going on. Dave Reynolds looked quick all weekend leading in the qualifying. They didn't even put fresh tyres on the car in the first practice sessions, which showed that they'd probably much got the handle on the car. And Cameron Waters looked fast all weekend as well. So qualifying was quite interesting. The big news was Scott McLaughlin. He qualified 16th, which was way down, totally unexpected. And this is what he had to say.
Who knows what will happen? Yeah, I'm not going to give you away my secrets right now, but yeah, but we'll see what we can do in the race. I've got to be smart, I've got to pick my way. Ideal, would love to get to the back end of the 10, and if we can get a few more and pick them off, yeah, it'd be awesome.
So if you get into the 10, you'd be reasonably happy?
Yeah, I think we'll see what happens. You know, I might be a little late safety car, I can throw a few bust ups into turn one and have a crack and we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, a couple of things here. You'd be happy if you got in the 10th, and something to think of if there's any dust-ups in turn one.
Yeah, interesting. His attitude there is to, after a big, big mistake by him and a big, big mistake by the team, that he's already thinking of how to escape from his dramas. I, for the life of me, I cannot understand why teams will sit there in pit lane not doing a banker lap before it comes time to do their final qualifying run. So they're all sitting there. There were like 12 cars sitting in pit lane while 8 cars were out on the track in that final 20. McLaughlin goes out on his with no chance to do a second run, locks the rears going into turn two, and that's it. He's 16th on the grid. I for the life of me, I can't understand why, when there's a top 10 shootout to come, you wouldn't have gone out and done a lap early so that you had a chance to recover. Just stupid, I reckon.
Well, is that because the tyres are so, they've got to look after the tyres so much?
Absolutely. But remember, you've only got to get into the shootout. You don't have to be first or second. You only have to be 10th, and 10th is enough. So Scotty McLaughlin could have gone out in that first opening part of the session. He would have done a time well and truly good enough to get into the top 10. And if he'd locked the rears, he would have had second chance to get into the top 10. As I say, I don't understand the logic behind it. I think you're putting a lot of faith in systems to say, you know, Scotty McLaughlin's, you know, clearly the qualifying whiz. But as he proved today, even the qualifying whiz can make mistakes. So, yeah, you take a risk. 16th on the grid, oof, tough ask.
A little bit of arrogance creeping in there, you reckon?
No, I just think people trying to be too clever with themselves. I think, you know, if you said to Scott McLaughlin, you know, I want you to go out and, you know, what do you want to do? He'll say, I want to go out and do a lap. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, but you'll wear the tyres out. He said, but I still want to do a lap, but I understand and I'll sit there and wait for you. I think they just want to play the smarty games. And yes, tyres are an issue. And we saw in the race, you know, tyres were an issue again. But let's be smart about this. Do you want to seal a championship or do you want to bring the championship back to life? And I think it was a championship back to life move by the Shell DJR team.
Okay, talk about stuff-ups. Team Red Bull pretty much had a bit of a stuff-up with Van Gisbergen. Well, close. He nearly didn't get through the first qualifying session. He finished in 19th.
I know, and how embarrassing would that have been? But it's the same level of not just arrogance necessarily, but smart-assedness, I'll call it, that they think they can do all of these games. So they brought him out. He did his lap, I think, with about 5 minutes to go in the session. And, you know, it looked okay. And they pulled him out of the car and he jumped out. And even Mark Scaife was sitting there looking at the timesheet saying, I don't think Van Gisbergen's safe. I don't think he's there. He was only just in front of Alex Davison, who we know is a regular qualifier in the bottom four. So he's only just there. And it was fascinating to sit there and watch as the session went on from there. And Van Gisbergen's gone from 8th to 9th to 10th to 11th to 12th to 13th. And you just watched him tumble down the order. He is bloody lucky to have got through that thing. And that would have killed his championship in one go.
Well, there was a few of those Red Bull team members. The old sphincter was getting a bit tight there, a couple of notches. But anyway, yes.
No, I think there were certainly sweating bullets would be the expression, I think. They would have been panicking at that point in time, I think. So, it's absurd. But that's what makes McLaughlin's decision and the Shell team's decision even more ridiculous, is that you've just watched Van Gisbergen trying games like that and almost disappearing down the back end of the grid, and then you go and do the same thing. As I say, I don't understand why people don't learn lessons quickly.
Well, qualifying was made even more painful for the Shell DJR team by the fact that Jamie Whincup skewered them all by getting pole, his 88th pole. Man, he loves that Townsville track.
Absolutely. And as you say, you know, he just looks so much at home up there. And I mean, what has he got? 10 race wins up there already. And that pole, you know, interestingly, 88th pole for car number 88. You know, you can read into that whatever you like, but it's an astronomically big number, isn't it?
Jamie Whincup is on pole, followed by Dave Reynolds, who's had a great weekend. Great start to the weekend. I've obviously done some change there. He's got a dedicated crew chief because Barry, the team CEO, owner, was doing everything. And I think that yielded straight away.
Dave spoke during the telecast about the changes that had been made to the car and how it instantly came to life for him. So clearly there was something that he was very unhappy with up in Darwin that they cured right from the start. And you know, great to see him back there. And I'm looking forward to hopefully giving him a few more points than he's been getting lately in the team, in the driver ratings.
He was followed by Chaz Mostert, then Cam Waters in fourth, and fifth, Anton Di Pasquale. Just the first three rows of the grid, Fabian Coulthard, so in sixth position. So it was all looking to be a pretty good race. And then all hell broke loose.
It kind of did, didn't it? I mean, Whincup obviously just nailed the start and he sprinted away. It was almost like he was going to win the race on the first lap the way he got away.
Dave Reynolds pretty much bogged down on the line. He was lucky to get away with third.
Yeah, he sounded like he was having a slipping clutch, but he probably had a lot of wheel spin when you hear the in-car footage. And he lost the spot to Mostert, and Cam Waters chased him down as well. So, but Waters didn't quite get him, almost did, but didn't quite get him. But he held the spot to Waters, but then behind them, just chaos broke loose. Van Gisbergen got into the back of Anton Di Pasquale and turned him around. There was speculation about Van Gisbergen being hit, but he was not hit by anybody. It was his trying to get up close to Di Pasquale. So he turned him around on his own with no assistance.
I thought that he was got into the back of, but then whoever got into the back of him, which was Frosty, got into the back of Frosty. Holdsworth.
Well, yeah, after the race, we saw the footage from inside Frosty's car. So Holdsworth definitely hit Winterbottom. He said he hit him hard enough to lift the rear wheels off the ground. But from the footage, he did not touch Van Gisbergen at all.
So the Gis
Van Gisbergen and Di Pasquale was completely done on their own, the twosome together.
Well, we'll find out what the kind of fallouts that's going to be.
But around that was chaos though, because after you've got a car turned around in the middle of the corner with 20 cars coming down, barreling at them, you know something's going to happen. So Van Gisbergen stuffed the nose of his car and he rolled out towards the edge, towards the fence, cleaned up a few others on the way, caused a couple of incidents down the back of the pack, and all of a sudden the pristine cars were looking very, very bruised and battered.
Coming out of it
really badly with Brad Jones Racing, with Macaulay Jones and Todd Hazelwood copping a heap of damage, and the Kelly boys. So Andre Heimgartner and Rick Kelly got into each other, and that was pretty much it for Andre. He was in massive strife from there.
Well, Anton, I would have to say, was very lucky. I know it wasn't his fault he got spun around because he was shoved around, but seriously, I'm surprised he came out of it with no other damage. With all the cars coming around, they just all decided to miss him and took each other out, and that was it. Yeah. It was all over.
It was like NASCAR, wasn't it? Go high, go high, go high. And everybody went high. And then Scott McLaughlin went low. And jumped eight spots to them. it was quite amazing to watch that part of it. You know, so some people got really good results out of it. So, as I say, McLaughlin jumped eight spots. Chris Pither did really well. He went low as well. And all the guys who went high were stuffed.
Scott wanted to get in the top 10. Well, he was in the top 10 after the first turn. So, that was pretty good to watch. Well,
he said he was going to have a go at the first turn, didn't he? And he did.
I would have liked to see if that hadn't have happened, how he would have driven through the field. So I was looking forward to that. But then again, I don't mind a bit of shenanigans at the start. I'm just like everybody else. Then after that, the race settled in, and in about lap 8, it wasn't really a mad rush to get in the pits when the window opened.
Yeah, which tells you, what that's telling you is that the tyre wear was significant. So remember at Darwin, lap 5 on that first race, everybody charged to pit lane. The next day they spaced it out over 2 or 3 laps. But in this case, you're 2 or 3 laps in and no one's even pitted. So it's telling you that the tyre wear is now significant. And by all reports, the deg was higher than they were expecting. So it was getting closer towards Sydney Motorsport Park than it had been in the past. So people were starting to be very careful of the tyres. And I think Scotty McLaughlin was one of the first guys to pit on lap 9, which was pretty amazing.
I think he was the first.
Yeah, right. Pretty sure he was.
Well, then he was going to do the long run on the other tyres. So I thought, okay, they got some plans there. That probably gives you an insight into their race strategy for the rest of the weekend a little bit. But then Waters on lap 7 got Reynolds.
Yeah. So he got through. So there was left him chasing Mostert's tail, which is something we always like seeing in this car racing game. Mostert and Waters together on a track is a great thing for car racing. So that was an interesting little battle forming there.
Getting back to the pit stops, I reckon I know why McLaughlin came into the pits early. I think he was trying to get clear air. But unfortunately, that didn't work because on the next lap, Holdsworth and Pye came in, basically got out in front of him again, and he was stuck behind those guys.
Yeah, I think they clearly knew they had more speed than qualifying showed. So the plan was, you know, pit him at a relatively early stage, knowing that you're going to have to make the tyres last 30 laps, which was the interesting part, give him some clean air and let him do some good laps and make up some space. So they did 3 tyres, which is interesting. So they do the 2 rears and the front left. So the front right at Townsville doesn't really do much work except for looking pretty. So they can do 3 tyres, which is slightly quicker than 4 because you can run an extra person to help you on the left-hand side of the car. And as you say, the aim was to get out there, run some clean laps, but then Holdsworth and Pye, who were right in front, pitted at the same time. Pye did 2 tyres, jumped them all in the pits, and Holdsworth did 3. And then you saw McLaughlin just sitting on Holdsworth's tail and unable to do anything about it.
Mostert at that stage was starting to drop off Wind Cup and basically was hurting Waters' run.
Yeah, I think Mozzie wasn't very happy with the car on that first set of tyres, and you saw him just dropping back a little bit here and there, and then it started to drop back in leaps and bounds. So it told you that the car wasn't as well set up as the 888 car. You know, Wind Cup's consistency was really good, but Mozzie was struggling. And I reckon Waters had a faster car, but he just couldn't find a way past him. And so that gave a really nice gap to Wind Cup, which meant that he didn't really have to try all that hard to protect anything.
Lap 17, Mostert stops for 4 tyres, gets the balance back. I mean, 4 tyres. There's a lot of 2, 3, 4. There was everybody trying different tyre strategies.
Yeah, they certainly were. But for Mostert, it was really a battle of saying, well, I didn't like those tyres, so just get them off me. And he did. He got the tyres back and he did some pretty quick laps after that. And, you know, he was very soon the fastest car on the track. I mean, I think his quickest lap was a 13.03, which he did on lap 18. So the first full lap after his pit stop. And he's, you know, second and a half quicker than Wincup at the time. It was a good move to do that. But of course, you know, you knew the Triple Eight guys weren't going to let that happen for too long and they were going to pit Wincup pretty quickly.
Yep. And then Jamie Wincup pits on lap 18. He took on three tyres and then pretty much got back out. Well, he was way ahead of the other guys. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it was comfortable. I mean, I don't reckon Wincup would have raised a sweat during this race. It was that easy. Yeah, he got a comfortable lead. I think he had about 6 seconds on Mostert at the time. And but Mozzie was closing. Mozzie had real pace here, and he did close in. I think he got down to about 1.5 seconds behind Wincup before he started to drop off again. He kind of hurt the tyres in that first 10 laps out, but he did have good speed.
Yeah, well, let's face it, Jamie Wincup came in halfway distance and then decided he just looked after his tyres. That's just what it looked like to me.
Yeah, and at this stage, the interesting part also was to watch McLaughlin, who decided that he wasn't going to get past Holdsworth at the time. And so he eased up a bit to protect his tyres. So he had to do 30 laps on these tyres, remember? So not just, you know, not the half lap, but 30 laps. And so at this stage, McLaughlin was already looking after his tyres. Maybe Mozzie should have paid a bit of attention to that as well and looked after them a little better too.
Well, I heard McLaughlin after the race being interviewed and he said that he had to back off for 10 laps to kind of cool the tyres down a bit and trying to get some life back into them before he can make another run.
Yeah, which was smart, you know. So after you've just seen them make a stupid mistake, they were then very smart. So, you know, what McLaughlin's thinking was, well, you know, I know their tyres are going to go off big time. So if I can look after mine without losing too much ground to them, I'm going to be in pretty good shape. I think as we saw at the end of the race, that was kind of working for him.
Well, in lap 19, Reynolds came in for two tyres and Coulthard came in for three tyres. Mostert was flying then, as you said. Waters was leading, but he hadn't stopped. The gap was around 35 seconds and it came down to, you know, that 35 seconds is enough to go down pit lane and stay in the lead, but the actual pit stop was actually how far behind the leader he was going to be. And so it came down to that. So I thought this was, I was waiting for this pit stop.
Yeah, well, we're looking at about 32 seconds, I think it is, for a car to travel pit lane in Townsville. So if you look at 32 seconds, you add 4 seconds for a two-tyre stop. Or about, you know, 7 or 8 seconds for a three-tyre stop.
8.2, I think it was, one of the fastest three-tyre stops.
What it turned out to be when he, yep, when he finally did it. But it's interesting to see. So you're thinking, you know, do you hold him out there? So Tickford had a strategy and they said, we're going to stop on this lap. And we're going to stop on this lap for this reason. And they knew what they needed at the end of the race. But those of us are sitting there thinking, but what about track position? What about track position? And all the time, like he had the 35 seconds at that point, but by the time he pitted, it was down to 30 seconds. So he lost 5 seconds to the effective, you know, what were going to be the leaders of the race at that time. And so when he did his stop on lap 24, it dropped him right down into this battle with Pye and Coulthard. So then he had to work for a living.
But it was, I think it was a good strategy because he had the probably pretty fresh tyres and it allowed him to race with all the other guys.
Yeah, and he had some speed, had some real speed and it didn't take him long to get his way back into third. You know, he just picked off the guys in front of him and got his way back there. And by the time he got clear of them and was chasing down Chas Mostert, he had a 1.5 second lap advantage over Wincup. Over Mostert, and about 1.1 over Wincup at the time. So massive gap, you know. So you knew with 10 laps to go, a 5 second lead for Mostert over him wasn't going to be too much. It wasn't going to be easy to defend.
Well, he gets up to third within three laps.
So he gets up to Mostert within, you know, and gets past him with 4 laps to go. So he effectively by their race strategy and sticking to what they thought was the right thing to do instead of panicking when they were watching times tumble, they got him back to second on the track, which was a good effort.
I love the footage of the pass that Cam did on Mostert. You could really show going around that high load right-hand sweeper around the back of the track where Mostert had to just feather off because of the and Waters just got him in there and then had him. Yeah. And it was it.
You can see, and that's one of those corners because it's such a high load, fast corner and it's got that big bump in the middle of it where the where the old rail lane was. It's a tough corner, and Mozzie was clearly struggling for grip at that stage, and Waters wasn't. And you can see it, as you said, you know, you can hear the wheel spin from Mostert's car as Waters is chasing him. And yeah, he was always going to get him, and he did. And then he set off after Wincup, but the gap by that stage was too big.
Well, Wincup's taken the checkered flag. Great win. Like I said, it's a pretty easy win, but some things going on that I wanted to touch. First of all, staying on Wincup, his radio went out. I think it was around lap 10. He didn't even see the checkered flag. He almost did another full racing lap and sort of was, and then didn't go into pit lane because the winner's circle was in the track. Then it changed to pit lane. He didn't know. He stayed out on the track thinking, where's the number one marker out here? And realised it's in pit lane, stopped his car in the middle of the track and jumped the pit fence to go and take up his spot in pit lane.
Yeah, and that's a clear thing. I mean, his theory was that he wasn't sure that the checkered flag had come out, so he was just going to keep going until he was sure, which is interesting. But, you know, without a radio to tell him that the race was over, he just kept on going. So, as you say, he ended up stopping on the pit straight and jumping the fence to get back in.
Don't you look at the guy with the flag above you, waving the flag?
Well, he said afterwards, when he came past him, he said the flag was only, you know, was there, but it wasn't out. He was just coming out, and he said he wasn't absolutely certain that it was pulled out for him.
Oh, well, I think there might be a conversation with the flag marshal tonight. Not from Jamie, but like, dude, get your flag out a bit quicker.
Yeah, I know it's one of those things, isn't it? But it just shows how dependent they've become on pit radios and things like that for big blocks of information.
Well, he was saying, can you get the pit board out? So maybe they didn't have a pit board with them. Maybe they couldn't pack that in a transporter because I left in too much of a hurry, but who knows. But a couple other notables, great battles down the order. Fabian Coulthard got Reynolds near the end there, which that was a pretty good battle between those two. James Courtney charged. He went from 14th to 6th. So that was a pretty good effort, I reckon.
Amazing effort. That was in about 14 laps as well. So, you know, on average, he was passing a car every two laps. It was a great drive. And again, it shows what we've been saying about Courtney is
his class.
You know, you can't write him off yet. Yeah, and he's showing it. And as he's getting more understanding of the car, things are working a bit better. So, you know, but to say 14th, he came out from the pits and just charged his way through the field. And you can see from the look on his face afterwards, he enjoyed himself.
Before we go to the finishing order of the race, I wanted to talk to you about a battle pack. Scott Pye, Anto Di Pasquale, Chris Pither, who did fantastic, kept his nose clean, Mark Winterbottom and Lee Holdsworth. There was a bit going on there at the end.
There was, wasn't it? And it's hard to remember who was leading who and who wasn't leading who. They were swapping spots. They were dipping and diving. There was all sorts of stuff going on. It was a really nice battle. And, you know, watching Di Pasquale come through the pack a little bit as well, which was good. Chris Pither was great to see him feisty and getting into it. But in the end, there was 2 seconds separating those five cars. That was a really good battle. Fortunately, they were able to show a little bit of on the TV.
Really happy for Chris getting up there in the Coke car. I was actually hoping that he'd get in the top 10. I think that's what he was trying to do, was stay in the top 10. And I think that's why he raced really hard. But again, I think it was a great result.
It was good stuff. I enjoyed it.
Well, the first race of the double header always promises to be a good one. And I think this one's delivered. The finishing order, Jamie Wincup first. Again, what was it? What win number was that?
6,200, I think.
Win number 6,000.
No, it was 121st race victory.
That's his 121st race victory. Second, he was is Cameron Waters, followed by Chas Mostert in third, Fabian Coulthard in fourth, Davey Reynolds in fifth, James Courtney in sixth, Scott McLaughlin in seventh. I reckon that's the best result he could have hoped for his qualifying position. And then Bryce Fullwood in eighth, and then Scott Pye. Well, rounding out the top 10, Anton Di Pasquale for the Penrite Racing Team. I reckon they finally got their shit together. Okay, race two, the first of the Sunday races, and the qualifying order, getting straight into it, is Jamie Wincup on pole, Chas Mostert in second, followed by James Courtney, Cameron Waters, and then David Reynolds in the fifth position. And let's round out the top three rows of the grid. In sixth position was Anton Di Pasquale. So Both the Penrite cars were in there.
Yeah, they found a good bit of speed, the Penrite mob. So good to see. But it was just a show by Jamie Wincup there. I mean, 0.13 second gap to Chaz Mostert in second. So that's a pretty big gap when you're talking, you know, half a second covering.
Scott McLaughlin qualified in 13th.
Yeah, and this time he did have two cracks at it. So not like the last time around where he just thought one would be good enough. So I think he went out, from what I understand, on old tyres to start with and did the fastest lap of the first part of the sessions. But when he put the greens on, the car didn't go any faster. In fact, you know, he was one of only two drivers in the field to not record a better lap than they did in their first run.
So getting into the race, it was pretty straightforward, though it was clear that some guys were saving their tyres and some of them were just going for it.
Yeah, and this comes down to where you qualified. So I reckon Scott McLaughlin was running this race in a very conservative mode on old tyres. So he didn't really, you know, he kept a good set of tyres for the next race because, you know, obviously qualifying's done. You know what your two qualifying positions are, and he knew he qualified much better in the second race than he did in the first race. So he didn't care. So he was just going to use bad tyres and hope that he scrambled a couple of spots. Whereas Jamie Wincup, for instance, he was out there going hard. So he thought, I've got pole position, I'm going out for the win. So to hell with it. If I can't win the third race because I've used all my tyres, then so be it.
Yeah, well, Wincup won the start from Mostert and Courtney. And McLaughlin, he didn't move up. He actually went backwards by two spots in the first lap.
Yeah, and he admitted afterwards he was a bit too conservative at the start, but he said he had a lot to lose, which was effectively his championship lead. And he was relying, I think, on their strategy, which was going to get him into a spot, which was, you know, he was going to be the first pitter all along so that he could get out of the traffic and into clean air and then hopefully get a set of tyres on that he could just burn the living daylights out of over the next 30 laps. And he was followed a lap later by Coulthard, who was behind him on the track. So clearly the Shell team said, we're coming in early, we're going to run really long, but we need fresh air. We want to stay out of trouble and see what sort of pace we can run. Because they were confident in their cars over a race distance, but they didn't like their single lap speed. So hence the qualifying performance. And they said afterwards they didn't tune the car up enough for qualifying. So race pace was great. Looked after its tyres, did everything. So they said, well, we can go the 32 laps. Let's see if anybody else can.
So now the leaders start thinking about their pit stops.
Yeah, well, Percat was the first of the main leaders. So unfortunately, it's strange to talk about McLaughlin not being a leader. But in this case, Percat was the first of the leaders to stop. And he did four tyres, which was interesting. And he did that on lap 11. Waters pitted the next lap, did three tyres. And he came in from this fifth spot. Then Courtney on the next lap did three tyres from third spot. And then De Pasquale did three tyres from sixth spot as well. So we're seeing a little bit of a shift here between three tyres and four tyres, but all in that same little window zone. And by the time we got to that, yeah, Wincup had snuck out to a three-second lead over Mostert and Reynolds, who was now in third because of all those stops. He was a mile behind the two of them.
Yeah, well, supposedly his speed was dropping off from qualifying. He had it in qualifying, but it wasn't there for the race.
Yeah. It was a bit probably like, remember we spoke last week about the Red Bull cars had either had race pace or single lap speed. And maybe that's the same for Dave Reynolds this day, that he had some qualifying speed, but the car was just not consistent in the races.
Mostert pitted on lap 20, lost his spot to Waters, but then got it back.
Yeah, he did. He dropped down into a spot behind him, but he had so much grip that it wasn't going to take long. So I think he came out about a second behind Waters and within a lap he was in front of him. So it just shows the freshness of the new tyres that just gave him all of that grip and he could do what he wanted.
Well, the leader finally came in on lap 22.
Yeah, well, you had to let somebody else lead the race eventually, didn't he? So Scott Pye took over the lead running for a few laps, but ran really long, which Wincup said was unusual. He's not used to running long on the first set, but, you know, they knew their strategy and they stuck to their strategy and they seemed to have the car as well. Like if we talked about before McLaughlin's car being consistent, Wincup's was even more consistent. It was a jet over long distances.
So Pye was the last one to pit, which basically put Jamie Wincup back in the lead, followed by Mostert and Courtney. But Courtney looked like he was struggling.
Yeah, well, you remember he was an early stopper and the car was really starting to struggle here and he was getting picked off by some of the guys who pitted later. So eventually, by the time the race was over, 10 laps or 15 laps later, you know, he dropped to seventh spot as people just picked him off.
Well, this brought the gears into play.
Yes, as if he needs an incentive, Van Gisbergen. So he saw a gap, he took a gap, he went for the gap, and he did it. So, yeah, he clearly had a lot of grip on his car as well. So he was a late stopper too. So, you know, it's interesting. This is what one of the things I love is about the strategy. It's, you know, do you stop early and get track position, or do you stop late and have grip? And in this case, it looked like, you know, if you had a big grip advantage, because we were talking at one stage, you know, the speed difference between a car that had just pitted and a car that had been out for umpteen laps was over a second a lap.
Well, McLaughlin, he started in 13th, brought the thing home in 6th in the end.
Yeah, not a bad effort, really, when you think about it. It's a big gain. And when you think that, you know, he qualified 16th the previous day and got himself back in, I think it was 7th. So he's doing well in the races, which is good because, you know, we'll talk about in a second, but he got pole for the next race. And you think, what's going to stop him if he's got a car that's that consistent? And it seemed to be good early on in a run, and then it would ease off a little bit. And then it would be crackingly good near the end of a run as well. So very good on its tyres, that car.
Well, I'll get into a bit of post-race, but the top five was Jamie Whincup, followed by Chaz Mostert. In third, Shane Van Gisbergen, Cameron Waters, and the top five, Nick Percat. Sixth was Scott McLaughlin, as we just mentioned, followed by James Courtney, Anton Di Pasquale in eighth, Scott Pye in ninth, and Dave Reynolds rounding out the top 10. Jamie Whincup admitted that he was going to be in tyre pain for race three because he'd probably played all his cards in that second race.
Yeah, yep, he did. And that's what I'd do as well. If I was on pole, I'd make sure I won the race. It's quite a simple thing. So, you know, if you've got to choose when you're going to take your pain in a race where you didn't finish on pole.
Well, look, if you're on pole, you might as well go for the win because, hey, you're doing it for the sponsors.
Absolutely.
I had to add it. What are you going to
do? Yeah, I know. Somebody's had some idle time this week, haven't they?
Okay, race 21, or the third race, or the second Sunday race, however you want to do it. I'll let it, which is the best one. The qualifying was interesting because that's when it's the sprinkle of rain come down and made everybody went, oh, 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 oh.
Was it nothing to think about umbrellas, wasn't it? Oh, it's going to be wet.
Look,
Let me panic.
Scott McLaughlin was on pole. Cameron Waters next to him. The second row, Nick Percat in third, and with Jamie Whincup in fourth. On the third row, Todd Hazelwood, and next to him, Dave Reynolds rounding out the top six. But something to note here was Nick Percat had a blistering time early on, and they even thought, this one's going to be hard to even beat. He did it early, so he really couldn't do another run. And I thought for most of the session, he was going to stay on top. But as it worked out, he got pipped by two guys.
Yeah, so Scotty McLaughlin and Cam Waters both told us they had great tyres left for the final race. Scotty McLaughlin was so confident in his tyres, he actually had two runs this time around. So yesterday when he buggered up and he only had one run, so today he had two runs and he snuck through. He put the fastest lap down after Percat was sitting in the pits watching. So he couldn't do anything about it. And Cam Waters at the same time did his quick lap and in they came, 2/100ths apart.
The lights go out and McLaughlin is clearly on top of his starts. And again, he just rockets away in the lead. But I don't think anybody who is on pole this weekend won the start.
Yeah, it's not like Darwin where you've got a really dirty line and a clean line. Like, because it's a street, a road that cars are on every day of the week, it doesn't have the same impact. So, yeah, he got away well. And he's been working on his starts. He's been trying to get his starts better and better each time. And clearly he's mastering that. So God help the field if he ever gets totally on top of it.
Well, turn two, even though it's actually turn one, because turn one's really a kink in my eyes, that was pretty hectic. Waters dropped a spot to Percat, but then got him back in the very next lap. Actually, Percat had a pretty good start.
Yeah, Percat had a cracking start, and Cam's start was good, but Percat's was just a jet, and he flew up the inside of him. Cam was very cautious, let him through. I think Cam knew he had a pace advantage over Nick. Didn't take him long to line him up and get him, and then set off after McLaughlin, which was a great battle for the first 10 laps, where the two of them just, you know, dogging each other and Waters closing in a little bit and pressuring him, but you know, guys like Scott McLaughlin just don't make mistakes in races.
Well, it was happening all over the place. Courtney was an early movie, was up three spots. The Gears was down two. Coulthard was down four. Those first couple of laps were just hectic.
Yeah, it's funny because Van Gisbergen qualified 13th and Courtney qualified 14th. And so, yeah, they're really sitting beside each other on the grid. One of them's gone up and the other one's gone down. So, you know.
It did just turn out to be a bit of a follow the leader affair, except down the back. 22nd to 24th. Those guys were going for it. Pither, Jones and Smith.
I know. How good was that battle? I'm pleased they showed us a little bit of that. It was a great little battle. They were dicing and doing everything. So it just shows that, you know, people talk about sheep stations in motorsport and they say, well, you're not driving for sheep stations, but you're driving for 22nd and that is a sheep station. So, you know, every spot counts, especially when you're a young guy building a career. So, yeah, it was great to see them really stuck into it. I loved that little battle. No one's pitted. We're on lap 13 and no one has pitted from near the front of the field. So everybody's starting to run longer in this particular race, which is telling you all about the tyres as well. So, you know, Frosty's making a bit of a move and grabbing Dave Reynolds, who clearly, again, wasn't as good in the race as he was in qualifying. But it's really just setting us up and bracing for the round of pit stops to see who goes where and who does what.
Well, that happens in two laps time on lap 15. Percat again pitted for four tyres. But Reynolds had a troubled stop for just three tyres.
I know. Imagine if he'd had four, he might have had more trouble. But it cost him quite badly. I think it was looked like it was about 3.5 to 4 seconds he lost because of the trouble on his pit stop. So, you know when the field's that close, it's going to cost you tracks position as well. But, you know, interesting, Percat taking on four tyres. So, again, we see a little bit of this four-tyre, three-tyre thing. And thankfully, Larko finally explained why three tyres was better than four tyres in terms of how long it takes to do, which is about the number of people he can have working on the tyres. So one bloke can do it one tyre in 5 seconds and two blokes can do a tyre in about 3 to 4 seconds. So you run three guys down one side and one guy down the other and it works out to be about 7 seconds instead of 8 or 9.
Yeah, but you got to be right on it. I saw a lot of failed pit stops from guys can't get that wheel nut off. It seems to be that rear left tyre was causing a lot of troubles.
Yeah, but I think it's also about the fact that these guys have been on the road for so long that they're not in their garages practicing the pit stops the way they normally do. So every team's got a rig for them to practice their pit stops so they can get it all fine-tuned. So they're not doing that sort of training at the moment because they're bad on the road and they don't have those things.
Okay, well, Waters was next to pit. He took on four tyres. He was trailing by 1.2 seconds. Then McLaughlin, the very next lap, pitted to prevent the undercut. He only took on three tyres, gets back in front of Waters in 1.3 seconds for the lead, but that kind of came to nothing. I must admit, I did enjoy the battle between McLaughlin and Waters at the end.
It was great watching Cam close in on him, wasn't it? You sat there thinking, come on, Cam. You know, not that we don't like Scotty, but come on, Cam, you know, nudge your way through and do something. Because it's 2017 since Cam last won a race. It'd be great to see him win it again. But what it shows, Nev, is the undercut in touring cars or in supercars is not what it is in Formula One. So we keep talking about undercut in Formula One. They come in and do their pit stop. Their tyres have been inside blankets. They're almost at operating temperature. You put a set of tyres on a supercar, they're not hot. So you come out on the track, you've got no grip, you've got nothing. So you're not really going to make a lot of stuff in that first lap. The second lap, you are though. You're going to make big ground on the second lap because you've got the car at temperature. So what you've got to prevent with the undercut is not that one lap, it's the two laps. So you do really need to pit straight after them to save yourself.
Okay, in the later stages, one of the movers, Scott Pye, he was up to sixth.
Yeah, nine positions up on qualifying. So clearly that team, or Scotty Pye in particular, needs to get on top of that single lap speed because it's costing them badly. I mean, he could have had podiums again this weekend like he did last weekend, but you're not going to make up too much ground, especially on a track like Townsville.
Okay, the finishing order was Scott McLaughlin, followed by Cameron Waters. In third was Jamie Wincup, rounding out the podium. In fourth was Nick Percat, again looked good. And in fifth, Todd Hazelwood, which was a great effort. A fantastic effort. In sixth was Scott Pye. Seventh was Anton De Pasquale, followed by Shane Van Gisbergen. In ninth was Lee Holdsworth. And rounding out the top 10, Mark Winterbottom.
Yeah, so it's an interesting top 10, isn't it? But yeah, it was one of those weekends, I think, where track position and certainly your qualifying performance dictated what chance you had of winning the race. So we got two people going, well, all three people went from pole to win. You know, it just shows the way it works if you can get it right.
That brings us to the points that the top three guys for the weekend, and Win Cup got the biggest bag of points, and 286, that's more like it. I think they've got their strategies a bit better than the last couple of rounds. Waters, 264 points in second, followed by McLaughlin, who recovered from some pretty ordinary qualifying to bag 232 points for the weekend. That brings us to the championship point standing. And Scott McLaughlin is on 1,556 points. Jamie Wincup's in second place at 1,433, which I'll come back to. Chaz Mostert's on 1,172. In fourth is the Gears on 1,157. In fifth is Cameron Waters, equal 1,157. And in sixth position is Nick Percat on 1,069 points. But I'll get back to Jamie Wincup. He's 123 points behind Scott McLaughlin. He's the only one that's actually in striking distance of Scott McLaughlin if Scott McLaughlin has a really bad weekend. We thought that might have happened this weekend, but he dragged back.
A really good recovery by Scotty McLaughlin. But yeah, 123 points is clearly gettable. So, we've got, four rounds to go. So probably Townsville and the two Bend races and then Bathurst. So it's tightening up between the two of them, which is great to see.
Well, I've said it before, Chaz Mostert's over 300 points behind, nearly 400 points behind Scott McLaughlin. Yep. If Scott McLaughlin crashes the car out of the truck even next round, the only person who's got any chance of catching him is Jamie Wincup. Chaz Mostert can win every race and still not catch him.
Yeah, so the 300 points has always been my thing to look at. So I used to run spreadsheets with little graphs and things, and I always had that as my marker. So once you fall out of that one round behind thing, your championship's effectively over, and you need a lot of luck to get back into it.
Well, that's the drivers. The teams, it's a bit closer. Oh, Red Bull Racing have now hit the lead at 2,444 points, and Shell V Power Racing teams on 2,438 points, 16 points behind. And then you got Tickford on 1,954, Penrite Racing on 1,863, and rounding out the top five is Walkinshaw Andretti Racing on 1,806 points. Okay, Clarkey, thanks for filling us in. Listeners, appreciate your time, and I'll put a shout out.
Driver ratings, yeah.
So I'll put a shout out later on the week. We'll have our driver ratings, and it should be quite interesting. If you want to keep up with what's going on, we'll put some of this stuff on. Go to our Facebook page, which is Supercars in Preview Review. Check that out, and we'll probably have a few other things there for you as well. Anyway, have a good evening.
So that's it for the first of 2 weekends in Townsville. Nothing out of the ordinary, with race winners being Jamie Wincup and Scott McLaughlin. But what was new was Scotty McLaughlin struggling in qualifying and missing the top half of the field in the first two sessions before taking pole for the final. For the championship, it all meant that Wincup closed the gap by 54 points to a more manageable 123 points. But this weekend was all about resurgence. Cam Waters was quick from the minute the cars hit the track, and ended up with second overall in the weekend in his Monster Energy Mustang. Dave Reynolds in the Penrite Commodore was back on the qualifying pace. It was great to see him smiling again. And Todd Hazelwood, with his new sponsor, had finally parked two very rough rounds in Darwin and is back near the pace in the final race of the weekend. What really entertained us, though, was some of the battles up and down the order. Even the fight for 22nd at one stage was alive and kicking. It's enough to make you miss being at the track. I'm Andrew Clark, and this has been Supercars in Preview. Join us soon for our driver ratings.